Enemies of the People, December 2022. Chapter 11, Switching to Authoritarian Mode. There is an undeniable nastiness about the Rothschild dynasty, which is something they seem to have deliberately nurtured. Yet another of the famous hard-nosed business rules that Meyer Amschel Rothschild taught his sons was, quote, "If you can't make yourself loved, make yourself feared," end quote. The freedom and well-being of anyone other than themselves has simply never been any kind of priority. As James de Rothschild declared in a letter to his children in January 1867, quote, "Finances cannot progress without liberties, but even less with too many," end quote. It was this mindset, so typical of the European ruling classes, that led them in the 19th century to give their backing to what Bouvier calls the forces of the counter-revolution. He adds, quote, "Everywhere they helped to provide money to absolute monarchies and prince tyrants in difficulties." Ferguson describes how in the 1820s the Rothschilds bankrolled the restoration of aristocratic power. Quote, "They enabled Austria, Prussia and Russia, the members of the Holy Alliance, as well as the restored Bourbons in France, to issue bonds at rates of interest only Britain and Holland had previously been able to enjoy. In that this made it easier for Prince Metternich to police Europe, notably when Austria and France intervened to restore the Bourbon regimes in Naples and Spain. There was truth in the jibe that the Rothschilds were the chief ally of the Holy Alliance," end quote. In particular, they funded Metternich in his attempts to crush the Italian liberal and nationalist movement against tyrannical Austro-Hungarian imperial rule. This same preference for centralised authority led them to pull away from their Egyptian investments when they feared British control was slipping in the face of resurgent Egyptian nationalism. It was also behind their opposition to the idea that the imperial capital, London, might give Ireland home rule in the form of some kind of devolved legislature and government. This, says Ferguson, quote, "seemed to threaten the integrity of the United Kingdom and to imply a general decentralisation of power throughout the empire," end quote. The Rothschilds' political position never really amounted to anything more than supporting anything that aided their profits and opposing anything that got in the way of them. While often in favour of increased government spending on armaments or any other products in which they had a vested interest, they've always been hostile to taxes which might adversely affect their own wealth. Ferguson writes, quote, "The Rothschilds shared that violent aversion so widespread among the rich of the period to any increases in direct taxation, especially those motivated by a desire to improve working class living standards. The Rothschild argument was that capital must be left free from taxation in order to accumulate. Only then could economic growth, increased employment and higher wages be expected," end quote. This hostility to any kind of economic justice led them even to reject the moderately radical wing of the Liberal Party in late 19th century Britain. Ferdinand Rothschild wrote in a letter that this tendency amounted to, quote, "stimulating an unhealthy desire for social and pecuniary equality, the disastrous results of which have been only too well illustrated in France," end quote. It was indeed in France that the Rothschilds first had to face up to the fact they would have to adapt their authoritarian royalist politics to embrace republican governments. But they drew a line between moderate republicans with whom they could work and radical or red republicans who presented a threat to their interests. As we've seen, railways played a crucial role in the Rothschilds' 19th century expansion, especially in the form of their giant Nord rail industrial complex in France. Following strikes by French rail workers in 1847, revolution broke out in February 1848, and the insurgents knew full well who their enemies were. The railways were seen as symbols of the new industrial economy and the wealth of those who were profiting from its exploitative domination. Numerous arson and sabotage attacks were carried out on railway infrastructure, those of Nord in particular. A section of the line near Paris suffered more than 1 million francs of damage, and a Rothschild chateau in the Parisian suburbs was set on fire. Eventually, order was restored, and it was business as usual for the Rothschild railways. Bouvier remarks that historians know nothing about the role of James de Rothschild in these events, adding, quote, "we can only guess his position, the defence of his own interests," end quote. The Rothschilds were very hostile to any proposed nationalisation of railways, as already mentioned, condemning the very notion as socialism. remarks Ferguson, quote, "As in England, socialism became a shorthand for any threatened state intrusion on hitherto unrestricted property rights." In 1892, Edmond de Rothschild wrote with alarm at the increasingly vocal socialist attacks on the plutocracy and warned of impending anarchy, while Alphonse predicted that the socialist epidemic would be more dangerous in France than in England. End quote. In 1924, Edouard de Rothschild openly criticised the left-wing French government for what he saw as its soft line towards striking railway workers and what he regarded as excessive public sector pay settlements. We know that the attacks against their empire in 1848 were very much on the Rothschilds' minds when revolt again broke out in Paris in 1871. The story of the crushing of the Commune is a good illustration of the Rothschilds' historical complicity with any extreme state violence that furthers their own ends. They saw the uprising coming in advance in August 1870, with Alphonse de Rothschild warning in internal correspondence that France risked becoming, quote, "a hotbed of anarchy," end quote. He initially hoped to deal with the threat of insurrection by means of controlled opposition, moderate republican leaders who, quote, "under the present circumstances could be called on to exercise an influence on events," end quote, and who had personally reassured him of their commitment to maintaining order. But when that didn't work, it was time to take off the velvet gloves. Alphonse did not hide his hatred of the, quote, "dangerous classes," end quote, of Paris that had dared to challenge the capitalist system from which his family profited so handsomely. The state had to, quote, "get rid of all those vermin, veritable gallows fodder, who constantly threaten society," he fumed. Quote, "Purge France and the world of all those rogues," end quote. In the bloody week which followed in May 1871, some 20,000 people died, around half of them rebels who were lined up and shot in improvised abattoirs at the orders of the army commanders. In the light of these attitudes, it is not surprising to see Rothschild links to violent authoritarianism in the 20th century. Support for the Bolshevik seizure of power in Russia may appear to place them on the side of the socialism they had always opposed, but as eyewitnesses like the Russian anarchist Volin were at pains to point out, the event in fact amounted to a counter-revolution against the threat of an authentic people's revolt. The involvement in the Bolshevik coup of Rothschild associates, including that great British believer in the highly organised state, in his own words, or in somebody else's words, Alfred Milner, is well documented in Professor Anthony C. Sutton's brilliantly researched book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Another important player was banker William Boyd Thompson, who in 1914 had become the first full-term director of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Thompson, explains Sutton, quote, "became an ardent supporter of the Bolsheviks, bequeathing a surviving symbol of this support, a laudatory pamphlet in Russian," end quote. Doherty and McGregor explained that Thompson was, quote, "a loyal Morgan man," end quote, and stressed that J.P. Morgan and the entire Morgan Empire were, quote, "very firmly connected to Rothschild influence," end quote. They add, quote, "writing in 1974, Professor Sutton was clearly unaware that virtually the entire international banking cabal was linked through a complex chain that led back to the Rothschilds in London and Paris," end quote. In addition to its role in suppressing real people power, the Soviet New Normal benefited Rothschild interests by pushing massive industrialisation, including electrification dependent on their copper supplies, and by forcing peasants off the land and into factories in a manner typical of each of the industrial so-called revolutions. Anyone who imagines that all this proves that the Rothschilds are communists is totally missing the point. Their only ideology is profit, and they will back whatever force might serve that self-interest, regardless of ethical, political or cultural considerations. The Rothschilds are not ideologically fascists or national socialists either, but this did not stop their vast financial empire from funding Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler's regimes. What better way of ensuring order and sustainable prosperity for themselves than by banning troublesome trade unions and left-wing political opposition, sourcing prison camp labour for private gain, embarking on massive industrial and military spending, and remodelling human life to answer the needs of their greed machine? Sutton notes that Thomas W. Lamont, head of the J.P. Morgan banking network, served as something of a business consultant for the government of fascist Italy and secured a $100 million loan for Mussolini in 1926 at a particularly crucial time for the dictator. In his book focusing on Germany, Sutton identifies, quote, American companies associated with the Morgan Rockefeller International Investment Bankers, end quote, as being intimately involved with the growth of Nazi industry. Quote, those firms controlled through the handful of financial houses, the Federal Reserve Bank System, the Bank for International Settlements, and their continuing international cooperative arrangements and cartels, which attempted to control the course of world politics and economics, end quote. He says the Nazis were funded by industrial networks involved in chemicals, automobiles, electricity, telecommunications and oil. Rothschild's associates, Paul M. Warburg, a director of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and his brother Max Warburg held directorships with IG Farben, the massive industrial complex at the heart of the Nazi regime, which, quote, produced 95% of German poison gas, end quote, which was to be put to such horrifying use in the concentration camps. As to why the Rothschilds would want to fund regimes which appeared to be diametrically opposed to their ethno-cultural affiliations, we have to bear in mind once again that their own family's finances are always their overwhelming priority. We might also consider Quigley's definition of the phenomenon in question, which has certain uncanny echoes in the 2020s. Quote, fascism is the adoption by the vested interests in a society of an authoritarian form of government in order to maintain their vested interests and prevent the reform of the society.